we present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Tovsvig.
Quiz. We start with a cutting from the New Statesman, read by Zeb Soans.
Despite not having the favour of Ed Miliband, Mary Cray has done well, even in unglamorous briefs.
And our thanks to John Miles for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Andy Hamilton and Rebecca Front. And opposite them on my left, Bob Mills and Jeremy Hardy. Andy, who's banking on a quick sale?
This must be the Royal Bank of Scotland, the bank that likes to say whoops. I'm not really qualified to talk about this. I've never had much interest in markets and stocks and all that stuff. I've never personally bought any shares, although luckily the government bought some for me in 2008. In fact, they bought them for all of us. All the taxpayers, we all got the government as a present. They bought us 80% of the Royal Bank of Scotland. And now, George Osborne, who understands these things, has decided that it's time to sell them at a loss of $7 billion. To be honest with you, I'm pleasantly surprised that we're getting any money back, because I kind of assumed that when you bailed out a failing bank, that was a bit like lending money to a friend who's pissed. You know, they say they're going to give it back Monday, but you know that's not going to happen. But the good news is that even though we're losing $7 billion on this deal, we're going to be absolutely minted when they sell Lloyds. Because for some of their shares, we've got shares in Lloyds, everyone.
I'd forgotten about my shares in Lloyds.
I know, so easy to do. And the great news is when they sell those, for some reason, we're all going to make a lot of money. We're actually going to end up in profit. And I don't know why Lloyds is so valuable. They sold the Black Horse.
He did rather slip that one past the media, where he said, well, although it looks as though we're making a loss on this, we're making a profit if you factor in other things which are nothing to do with it. I mean, I'm 5'6", but if I factor in a ladder, I'm over 6 foot. He's also going to bring in a law that says that he has to run a surplus. Because the reason that he had to abandon his last deficit plan was that he wasn't legally bound to his target, you see. And the reason he supported Gordon Brown's spending plans right up to the banking crash was not because he didn't see the banking crash coming. It's because of a legal loophole. So he needs a law to make him do the thing he says he's going to do. Because otherwise, he'd be like a man who thinks, well, I do feel the call of nature, but, I mean, there's nothing on the statute book about lavatories, so I'm just going to go in my trousers.
I think that what they show, especially our Chancellor, is aspiration. It should be an aspirational thing living in a country. And I watched him at the Mansion House, and I watched his speech, and it didn't make a lot of sense to me. But I did say to my wife, next time you're in IKEA, get some of them gold plates. Because I'm thinking that food tastes a little bit better off a gold plate.
They often say, oh, you don't understand, you can't compare, you know, the economy of a country with your household economy. And then they try and explain it to you by saying things like, we're going to fix the roof while the sun's shining, which, of course, is an entirely comprehensible image. So assuming that is the point of this bringing in this law, that the country always has to have a surplus in normal circumstances, which is the very heavily italicised proviso. Assuming that's what they're doing, I mean, I can understand that. Actually, that does seem like a very good, sensible bit of household economics. If, however, you're spending the money to fix the roof and keeping a load of money in the bank and your children are having to eat out of food banks, that seems to be slightly less sensible, I think. But I don't understand economics.
Yes.
I just think...
Yeah, but off gold plates.
That's where I got it wrong.
I thought it was quite refreshing for a politician to say, though, that he's going to fix the roof while the sun's shining, because most would arrange to stay in their second home while it's being done, so... I thought it was fine.
I don't understand what normal economic conditions are. Because there is no normal, is there? I mean, the economic conditions are always decided by the market. I mean, what's a normal interest rate? All I can say is that if this law relies on someone defining what is normal, I don't think that person should be George Osborne.
That's true. No, he kept saying, he talked about normal times, and I kept thinking, I wonder what normal times are. It does sound like a really awful start to a novel, doesn't it? It wasn't the best of times, it wasn't the worst of times, it was, well, it was, you know, sort of normal time. Did you see Mark Carney, the Bank of England governor? He is talking about heralding a new age of people in the city being responsible.
Yeah.
Yeah, how does that work? The bankers put the toilet seat down after they've snorted cocaine off it. I don't know how.
He came out with my favourite expression of the week, where he said that the banks had been guilty of ethical drift. Oh. Try that one in a courtroom. I'm sorry, Your Honour. Yes, yes, they did catch me trying to steal all their stuff, but I was suffering from ethical drift.
Chancellor George Osborne has announced that the government will sell its stake in the Royal Bank of Scotland, resulting in a £7 billion loss to the taxpayer. The bank was bailed out in 2008 for £45.2 billion in exchange for 80% of the company, making it the second most costly stake after the one Jeremy Clarkson got sacked over. The Chancellor made the announcement after a lavish dinner at London's Mansion House, where he talked about saving money before looking at the bill and saying, well, I didn't have a starter. Osborne said the RBS sale was the right thing to do for taxpayers as opposed to the left thing to do for taxpayers, which is to spend all their money on a giant stone tablet and then lose it. During the dinner, Osborne said, frankly, in the short term, the easiest path for the politician is to leave it to someone else at some future time to pick up the pieces in what must be the most comprehensive answer to the question, would you like red or white? 2 points to Andy. Rebecca, who said back or sack and then cracked?
Well, this would be to do with the EU referendum, in which the options are, as with the hokey-cokey, in, out, or shake it all about. And it was a meeting of the G7 leaders this week, and Cameron's been sort of doing the rounds and talking about the referendum and how he's trying to negotiate with European leaders. And he went on the Andrew Marr show, and he talked about this very simple issue. There's the referendum question, which is a simple yes-no, but there's another question which has a simple yes-no answer, which is, will ministers who want to opt out of the EU have to resign from the cabinet? Very simple, yes or no. And he gave a crystal clear answer, absolutely very clear, couldn't be misunderstood. Unfortunately, Andrew Marr, who obviously isn't used to political interviews, talked over him. And so he then was asked the same question again a few days later, and he gave another crystal clear answer, which bafflingly some journalists seem to think was the direct opposite of what he had said previously. It's become more and more befuddled as the week has gone on. And other ministers have weighed in. Philip Hammond, the Foreign Secretary, and Boris Johnson, the minister for just sit there where I can keep an eye on you. They've all sort of, you know, stuck their two penneth in and said, well, he should definitely sack people, or no, he should definitely not sack people. And the Prime Minister has just looked increasingly cross and just said, but I've told you what I'm going to do. And so far, nobody seems to know what that is.
No, he's kept saying, I've been very clear, and that's apparently code for your question is annoying me.
Why are we bothering with the referendum, really? Because, I mean, everyone's sort of made up their minds, aren't they? It seems to me. I mean, what possible concessions could Cameron negotiate that would satisfy the Eurosceptic diehards? I mean,
well, apparently one of the things is that migrants will have to wait 4 years to claim benefits. That's one of the things that he wants. And it just goes to show that David Cameron has clearly never met a migrant. In 4 years, our Lithuanian builder, he wouldn't be claiming benefits. He'd have rebuilt the UK. I mean, he's the most astonishing force of nature.
But that would not satisfy the diehards. I mean, I think something like Europe to be renamed Lesser England. That might go some way. You know, Spain to be ceded to Gibraltar. I mean, the other thing that occurs to me now as well is for it to be plausible that he's got concessions, they have to look like hard-won concessions.
Been tough.
It's got to be tough. So he's going to have to ask for some play-acting from Angela Merkel. You know, behind closed doors.
I'll be honest, she doesn't look the playful type.
Well, no. But he'll need it. He'll need her to go, you know, behind closed doors. He'll need her to go, oh, no, no, David, please, no, no.
You know, no, Sylvia Berlusconi tried that.
The people who are lining up, it's thought that Ian Duncan-Smith, Philip Hammond and Michael Gove are all potential no voters. I have to say, it doesn't matter what the question is, or does it really? Europe, welfare, fun, they're against it. It's kind of the usual suspects, isn't it? But you're right, I don't know what possible concessions they might want to.
They had the ex-Prime Minister of Belgium on, and he was interviewed today, and he said in some strange accent which sounded like almost perfect English... If you leave the common market, it makes no sense because we all want you to stay in. And also, it would cost you £4,000 per person. And there's nothing to be gained at all. If there are concessions that need making, we'll happily make them. But most of them your government could make anyway because the laws aren't that strict. And I sat there watching, oh, there's a typical foreigner sitting there talking sense. Gets on your nerves, doesn't it?
David Cameron maintains that he was misinterpreted in reports that claimed he would force cabinet ministers to support him in the forthcoming EU referendum. On Sunday, it was reported that he'd make ministers resign if they wanted to campaign for Britain to leave the EU. On Monday, he said his comments had been misinterpreted, and on Tuesday, we all went back to worrying about that dog from Britain's Got Talent. One in three Tory MPs could join the group called Conservatives for Britain, which is different from Conservatives for Britain's Got Talent, where Michael Gove climbs a ladder and then Philip Hammond runs across a wire. Cameron was speaking at the G7 conference in Germany, which used to be the G8 until Zayn left. To Rebecca. Bob, who's vetoing votes for everyone?
Oh, is this is David again, yeah. David Cameron, the Prime Minister, and the Scots. This is a strange situation that's arisen with Scotland, who had a referendum for independence and were a day away from voting for independence. And then Cameron and Miliband and Clegg went up there and promised them apes, peacocks and even unto half my kingdom, please. Which was just an ego thing, because none of them wanted to be the people whose names appear in the history book as the party leaders at the time that, you know, the union broke up. So they made these stupid concessions, which just influenced enough Scots to give the no campaign a majority. And we're now living through this ridiculous thing, which someone on the radio the other day called a dog's breakfast. Although my dog has rather nice breakfast, he always has a bit of lean steak and that. But this is this ridiculous situation where you have this tranche of 50-odd SNP MPs, and now we have to... we won't let them vote on things that don't affect Scotland, but everything kind of affects Scotland. They can always work that out. And it's this terrible mishmash that has come about just because we weren't brave enough to just say, well, you know, if you want to leave the union, leave the union, and not make concessions in advance that we couldn't possibly keep to. And what the Scottish Nationalists are doing, of course, and this is a really difficult thing for me to say, believe me, it really is, because it's something that I've laid down my life to support, but they're trying to have their cake and eat it, all right? And on this particular occasion, it doesn't really work for them. So we're in a terrible state at the moment where Parliament doesn't know what it's doing, and we're going to have the next 5 years of constant irritation until someone comes up with the perfect solution.
Which is?
Let's have a referendum to decide whether or not Scotland should be an independent nation or continue as part of the Union. Only this time... let us vote.
Bob, what kind of dog have you got?
I've got a lovely little... it's a cross between a Chihuahua and a Maltese. Oh, it's gorgeous. It's a tiny little thing, but it thinks it's massive.
This is all about the West Lothian question.
It is.
And, of course, the West Lothian question is, what is the West Lothian question? But now we know.
I was going to get a West Lothian, but then we looked at a border collie, but then in the end... we left it the ones who...
Well, one of the people against this, they kept saying, surely this means the Scottish MPs are going to be forced to sit in the House of Commons and debate legislation that they have no hope of influencing. And I thought, well, if the Lib Dems could do it for 5 years, I can't see why. David Cameron is to change Commons procedures to remove the right of Scottish, Welsh and Northern Irish MPs to vote on legislation that only pertains to England. Some senior Tories, such as John Redwood and David Davis, are requesting a full English Parliament, which is like a normal Parliament, only it includes sausages, beans and a grilled tomato. 2 points to Bob. Jeremy, which ex-spin doctor has a grim diagnosis for anyone going into Labour?
Well, everybody has an opinion now on what Labour should be doing. Tony Blair's been, you know, going on about what Labour should do, which is odd since there's no history of his ever supporting the party, so why why he even cares. But, of course, the spin doctor is Alistair Campbell, who just won't beggar off. You don't have a job anymore. Go away now. But he was being all alpha male, and he said, if the new leader doesn't shape up within 3 years, he's just going to lamp them one in a bar.
I think what we should bear in mind, of course, with Alistair is that, you know, he has heroically overcome twin problems of mental illness and addiction. Because as a young man, he was diagnosed with acute self-importance syndrome. which he's tackling one day at a time. And also, of course, he's written very movingly, very eloquently about his sort of debilitating lifelong addiction to TV cameras. And Jen's right. They just won't, the three of them, the three amigos, Blair, Mandelson and Campbell, just won't leave us alone. I think part of it is that denial thing. Because Blair was never defeated, was he, in his own mind. He's never really accepted that he was rejected. And I think until he has some kind of therapy whereby he's led into a room and bombarded with excrement, I don't think he will. I don't. Actually, that's quite a good idea.
That's not bad.
Yeah. I don't think he will fully appreciate that nobody wants to hear from him anymore.
Did anybody see Harriet Holman in the
press? Harriet, well, she did a rather strange thing. She was sort of like complaining about David Cameron gloating. And she said, "You're gloating." And then she said, "Show some class." And I think David Cameron's class seems manifestly obvious to me. I mean, couldn't make it more plain if he was surrounded by baying hounds, which he usually is. Liz Kendall, she's first off the mark every week to agree with everything Cameron says. Before Mary Cray even has a chance to agree with everything Cameron says, Liz Kendall is in there first. You think, look, the point of opposition is to oppose. The point of being an alternative is to be different. I'm not here to advise Conservative voters, but if you want Conservatives with Conservative policies, vote Conservative. They've been doing it longer, they've got more experience, and their heart's really in it. Why would you want to vote for somebody who has either opportunistically decided to clothe themselves in Tory policies for cynical reasons, or has absent-mindedly joined a party that's supposed to be different?
Makes me look forward to the next Labour rally. What do we want? We don't know. When do we want it? Stop asking so many questions. ex-Labour spin doctor Alistair Campbell was among many people voicing their opinion on the future of Labour ahead of the party's leadership nominations on Monday. Campbell said he will happily lead the charge to oust the next Labour leader should they fail to make an impact. So if you're not keeping up, that's an unelected official threatening to sack a person who hasn't been chosen yet from a job they don't have. Democracy in action, ladies and gentlemen. Also this week, Deputy Labour leader Harriet Harman said that many Labour voters were relieved the party did not win the election. Meanwhile, the Liberal Democrats... Oh, no, my mistake. Nothing. At the end of round one, the scores are Andy and Rebecca have got 4 points, but so too have Bob and Jeremy. We start round two with a cutting from the BBC News website.
A French horn that's the only one of its kind has been stolen from the home of its creator in Derbyshire. Tom Fisher said, "I spent hundreds of hours on this horn, designing and engineering it. This is a major blow."
And our thanks to Gaynor Hughes for sending us that. Rebecca, who said XX plus XY equates to bad science?
Professor Tim Hunt, who is a Nobel Prize-winning fellow of the Royal Society, a very eminent scientist, and he gave a talk to, I believe, a Society of Science journalists, and said some things which he later regretted saying. And said, I suppose I should have thought about saying that in front of a group of scientists, journalists, and you can think, it's a group of science journalists, that's what the talk is. Anyway, what he said in this speech was that he thought it wasn't great to have mixed gender labs. Mm. I think he was trying to be light-hearted, but he said the problem with having women in labs, there were three problems. One was that they fall in love with you. Two, you fall in love with them. and three, they cry if you criticise them. Now, having made these statements, he pretty well wrote off number one as a risk, I think. That's unlikely to happen. But, you know, and anyway, he's apologised, and he's had to resign from the board of University College London, and, you know, so there's been a bit of a hoo-ha about this whole thing. Now, in his defence, I mean, there are problems for women in a scientific area. You know, their lovely long tresses can get scorched by a Bunsen burner. And their lady boobies can, you know, knock over flasks full of dangerous chemicals. And they can suffer severe concussion by repeatedly banging their heads against a glass ceiling. But what's rather marvellous about this is that Twitter has taken it on, and there's a hashtag, which I urge you to look up, which is hashtag distractingly sexy. I urge you to have a look at hashtag distractingly sexy, where women who work in science have taken pictures of themselves wearing the most ridiculous sort of protective gear. You literally cannot make out if it's even a human being. And then just sort of said, sorry, I'm being distractingly sexy today.
Well, and Sir Hunt said single-sex workplaces worked better as they reduced sexual tension. Can I just say, not always, Sir Hunt.
This is terrible, I'm sure, what he said in this modern society we live in. But if you look back in history, if you've ever studied the biographies of the great scientists, when her husband suggested that in the radium mass equation she should perhaps extract to the power of six, Marie Curie broke a petri dish and slammed out the room and said, you never loved me, talk to the slut from the post office.
Tim Hunt is a Nobel Prize winner, but can I just remind everybody in the audience that Marie Curie won two Nobel Prizes in two different scientific disciplines, while Tim Hunt only won one, and I may need one of the men to help me, but two is greater than one, isn't it? The Nobel Prize-winning scientist Sir Tim Hunt has resigned from his post at UCL after he told a delegation of female scientists that their peers distract male colleagues by falling in love with them and cry when they're criticised. Hunt made his comments at the World Conference of Science Journalists in Seoul, South Korea, just before the cancellation of Prince Philip's talk on eye size. Sir Hunt won a Nobel Prize in 2001 for his pioneering work in persuading a woman to marry him. If Tim Hunt is any good at tractor drag racing, he's thought to be a shoo-in as the next host of Top Gear. 2 points to Rebecca. Jeremy, who's going ape over alcohol?
Chimps. Somewhere in Guinea?
Bosu in Guinea.
Bosu in Guinea. They make a drink by tapping little wedges into these trees that have a very sugary sap, and it leaks out, it ferments very, very quickly to make a very delicious drink, and they leak it out into a pot and put a leaf over it. It stops trains from running it over. But what happens is that the chimps have been taking off the leaf and then they've been scooping it out and getting slaughtered. But apparently they stop at a certain point. But they think this is an important part of our evolution because our ancestors discovered alcohol, and this meant that they started getting a bit leery. And because once you've had alcohol, you get the munchies, you want to eat something, and so you're getting more calories. Alcohol's got a lot of calories, and you're making sandwiches late at night. And so we suddenly had this massive, we put on loads of weight and evolved in some way. We were drunk, and that's when we started to make really sensible decisions about our future, and that's how we evolved.
I remember being in a remote part of Zimbabwe, beautiful sort of tented hotel, and there was a fantastic swimming pool with chairs all around, and there was nobody out at the pool. A lovely waiter said to me, would you like to care for a drink? I said, oh, that'd be lovely. I'll have a fruit punch, please. And I'm going to sit out by the pool. He went, okay. So I went out by the pool, and he came out with this fantastic rum punch and a 3-foot thick stick. And I said, oh, what's the stick for? He said, the drink is for you, madam, the stick is for the monkeys. And they love the rum punch so much they fought me for it.
That is an absolutely wonderful sort of 1960s Disney nature film. You know those ones they used to make with a commentary which went, uh-oh, here come the little guys. And I think it's called Beautiful People, but it includes a sequence in the Okavango Delta or something where an oasis sort of flowers and all this fruit ripens and drops to the ground and ferments, and all the animals get absolutely smashed. And if you've never seen a pissed giraffe, you know, trying desperately to untangle its legs, and there's a fantastic sequence where this very leery drunk baboon, he's going mad, and then he starts running full pelt down this hill and just goes straight into a tree. And then the next scene is the morning after, which is all the animals with hangovers, all the baboons sitting there with their head in their hands, this giraffe with its legs in a reef knot. It's just...
Scientists from Oxford Brookes University have confirmed the drunken monkey hypothesis, which is the hypothesis that given half a chance, all apes will get absolutely trashed. Most of the chimps would start boozing at 7 a.m, arguing that in Singapore the sun was already over the yard. I knew they weren't drinking teas, no wonder they never shifted that piano. 2 points to Jeremy. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they would like to share?
I've got one here from Marie Brown, and it's from the local police on Twitter. And it's got a photo of three rather unprepossessing-looking individuals. And it says, group given 14 years for conspiracy to bugle.
This one was sent in by James Smith, and he got it from the BBC London TV News. An exhibition exploring the story of spray painting opens in London this week. It's a style of painting that was made easier with the invention of the spray can. In
Sadly, this was sent in by David Dutton of Haddington, and it's on the Church of Scotland website. Church speaks out against organ trafficking.
Let's take a look at the final score. Andy and Rebecca have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Bob and Jeremy with 13. Before we leave you, here is an advertisement from the Banbury Cake, sent in by Nick Dunn.
Banbury Pest Control. Wasps, ants, fleas, flies, rats, mice, cockroaches, bedbugs. Discount for OAPs.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Rebecca Front, Bob Mills and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Tosvick, and the news was read by me, Zeb Soames. The chair script was written by Gareth Gwynne, Lucy Clark and Tom Neenan, with additional material by Gilead Ahmet, Gabby Hutchinson-Cratch and Max Davis. The producer was Lindsay Benner, and it was a BBC Radio comedy production.